Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
And Rich Hudson.
Hello.
It's that time of the week where we round up a whole bunch of different news stories, some things that we touched on earlier in the week. You can go check out the video versions on the main What Culture Gaming channel, and a whole bunch of stuff that we didn't get around to that's worth talking about anyway, and things that broke before we had time to make full videos out of them, like the thing that came out last night, which is the new Jedi Fallen Order trailer, which was revealed down in Pinewood Studios with Warwick Davis and whatever at this big Star Wars event.
Force Friday
for Triple Force Friday, apparently. Mm. The two things just seem to be merchandise, new bits and figures. And
they look really good, though.
They do look
quite
good.
Have you seen all the figures, mate? I want all of them.
I kind of want all of them. I think Cal Kestis' figure might be more interesting than I am in Cal Kestis himself.
Try saying Cal Kestis over and over again.
Cal Kestis, Cal Kestis, Cal Kestis. I'm a big Cal Kestis fan.
He's pretty good.
Eating your words there.
I don't mind, but so...
Kested me.
Something that came out of that Kessel run was Cal Kestis' story trailer for Jedi Fallen Order, which they've obviously hinted at different bits and pieces as to why you're fighting for the Rebellion and whatever before. But what do you guys think, as you've just checked it out before we came in?
So I was a little bit mixed on the E3 showing that they showed off earlier this year. I thought presentation-wise, it looked absolutely stunning. I thought the actual gameplay itself, I like the mixture of puzzles and platforming. I thought that was okay. The combat was where I was looking a little bit iffy, even though that was kind of the most lauded aspect of all the demos so far. Mm-hmm. And I kind of am a little bit annoyed at the whole cake and eat it approach to dismemberment. It's like you want to show them cleaving through people, but they're still going to be put together. Jedi Outcast was doing this crap in 2002, and it was much more successful. but at the same time, I'm starting to get a little bit more engaged with the characters now. I think there's a little bit to be said about the focus of Star Wars, you know, mainstream stories that tend to focus on, you know, generic human people with blue lightsabers, and that's kind of a running motif of the series. But I'm warming to the overall premise, and I'm definitely excited to see what they do with the Inquisitors after Star Wars Rebels, because they're really cool characters that were introduced on that show, and I'm really excited to see how that goes.
Their lightsabers have like a particular design that I haven't seen
in the comic. In the TV show, they can spin it so fast they use them as personal helicopters. So I'm looking forward to seeing if they do that.
That better be something we do in the game.
Skill tree. Yeah.
Yes, Rich, what do you think of the old Star Wars?
I'm looking forward to this a bit more now. It hasn't been on my list of things to play for the end of the year. I think it's one of those things I'm going to come back to potentially. I don't know. Find out. I kind of after like the, you know, all the stuff about Last Jedi, I kind of fell off Star Wars a bit. Like I was really super into Star Wars, like from Force Awakens all the way through until that, through Rogue One and everything. Mm-hmm. So like I still haven't seen Solo. Like I just fell off it a bit. So this is like, you know, when it was first announced, it's like, oh, you know, I really would like a proper Star Wars game to get into, because the one thing I haven't really done in games is actually properly play Star Wars games.
You have so many lovely beloved LucasArts games to go back and check out.
I bought Republic Commando on Steam.
You haven't played it?
I played a little bit because of your recommendation. I do have that, but yeah, I need to go back to Battlefront 2, and I think like hopefully Fallen Order will get me into the Star Wars thing, because watching the trailer and it's just kind of like, yeah, I could be doing with this, but I think I might hold off. It's not going to be on my list of things to play. I don't want to get myself too busy.
My thing is, I have such faith in Respawn, mainly because of Titanfall. But I just think that, like, they have such a great sort of like studio ethic where they're just really taking their time. And like when they finally started debuting it, like I think it's weird. Cal Kestis, I think, is, I'm going to assume that he's intentionally quite bland and forgettable. Yes. I think the whole thing that they're doing with him is to take you on a bit more of a journey, more of an arc, because the new trailer shows him like meeting up with his companions and stuff, and going on that adventure, and going on like a big ship, and getting whisked off to go do like his sort of Star Wars journey. So I quite like that in theory, and like the combat, I think some of the animations look a bit kind of twitchy, a little bit too rushed. But at the same time, sometimes when he does sort of cleave someone's stomach half in half, then I'm kind of, I'm a bit more on board.
Would you agree in saying that maybe Respawn have spotlighted the, not the least attractive parts of the game, but certainly the least unique? Because the write-ups that came out after Fallen Order debuted at E3 made the game sound so much better than the actual...
That's a really good point.
Because the actual planet hopping mechanics, the way you use the starship and how you can customize it, they didn't really go into that. And they only touch upon it in this trailer as well, which is curious to me because I feel as though if you've given Star Wars fans a game where you play as a Jedi, you can customize your own lightsaber, customize the blade that comes out, you can customize the ship that they're on and choose which planets you go to. I think that's a major unique selling point, and they're not really tapping into that.
I think they're trying to do a thing where they're trying to like play their cards quite carefully, but it's weird because in the new trailer you do see that planet mission, planet menu where you're picking where you want to go, and then the hands-on stuff from the last trailer or the hands-on demo stuff said that it does have like a Metroidvania feel, that you're going to different places, you're unlocking items, then you can go further and whatever. So there's like way more of like an adventure, like, you know, like interlocking way that you control, like you play your casters and unlock abilities to get further and whatever. That has barely come through. They've sort of shown like little bits of the gameplay, but not massive amounts. I think they've got like way more to show, but I guess I don't think we have a particular release date for it.
November something or other. I think
in the teens.
I think I'm down for reviewing it, I want to say.
You're a Star Wars man.
Maybe they're trying to play almost like a Marvel approach of let's just show them whatever because we can sell this on hype alone. But I think because it's a game, they can't really do that. We saw that with the Avengers Project at E3 when we finally got the trailer for that and everyone kind of went, oh, okay. Because they were trying to sell it off like they were showing as little as possible, but just like not anything
it's like
that, that meaty because they want to get the intrigue factor in, which obviously they can do so easily in the MCU, not so much with the Avengers game and obviously not so much with Star Wars either.
Part of me like really wants them to do what Rockstar do, like have an overvoice and just walk you through a bunch of different mechanics and be like, well, this is what you'll be doing later, this is what you're going to be doing now. Like,
because that's what people care about.
More like vague approach is fine, but people aren't losing their minds over it.
Potentially bad for them to do that.
So,
I'm interested to see how this feeds into Battlefront 2 as well, because they've got loads of exciting stuff planned towards the end of the year. They've got Rise of Skywalker content coming out, and I think they have some Fallen Order tie material as well. They've just introduced Felucia as a map, and they've introduced the Republic Commandos in gameplay as well. So there is plenty of stuff coming from
2019
is
the return of the Republic Commandos because they're in Gears 5 as well. Just popping up all sorts. No, they're not. That's the Halo Reach people. It's so close to all the different Republic Commandos.
The real Star Wars fan, Scott Telford.
Yeah, Last Jedi devastated me.
I loved Master Chief killing
Darth. Oh, you had to shoehorn it in there, didn't you?
We did, but that's a conversation
for another
time. Last
Jedi's great, shut up.
The next one I've got down is something that we did another video on earlier in the week, but it's just the next Batman Arkham game is 99% confirmed. We had Scott Snyder, the author of Court of Owls, and other different books as well, and the new Batman stuff, just tweeting out, beware the Court of Owls, and then deleting the tweet. Alongside then Warner Brothers Montreal then tweeted out a sort of GIF thing with a bunch of different symbols in and just said capture the knight with a K.
May have lost my mind going through
after
all that.
You're still losing your mind, looking forward
to it as well. I mean, how many videos have we done sort of picking apart different rumours and snippets and leaks?
It's been 84 years.
It's been a long time. But I guess at this stage we still don't have a full on official confirmation, but it's nigh on happening, so we'll go with that.
I think the prevailing theory at the moment is that a New York Comic Con announcement might be coming, which is next Thursday. So that would make sense. You give Batman his own platform to do his thing. You don't have it on State of Play with The Last of Us, which is already going to have a big thing. Whereas if you take it to Comic Con, you only know the competition there. I don't even think Square Enix will be there for Avengers to demo that anymore. So I think it will just be Batman's time to shine.
Plus, like in terms of like DC stuff, they have Joker very soon. They seem to be like being way more careful. It's not as ridiculous in terms of just throwing money in all directions and hoping for the best.
I was thinking it could have been the Xbox event. Because that's in middle of November.
They could do something,
because they said, obviously, that PR guy said, oh, it's imminent. Then maybe it wouldn't be that long, because that's still a few weeks away.
I would say that the Arkham games have a history of having some sort of promotional tie to Sony as well at the same time. Yeah. There was a lot of exclusive stuff.
Because with Ghost Recon, Microsoft have kind of paid to get there. It's all Xbox branding on the beta and stuff like that.
It's like that with Fallout as well.
Yeah, so it's like...
76 had that as well.
I wonder if they're just throwing money at different publishers. Because the thing is, when State of Play happened the other day, there was an inside Xbox stream straight after it, and the world didn't care whatsoever. It was just kind of like...
It's stupid of them to do it then.
I know, and I think they just kind of hoped that, you know, one would benefit from the other, but it just ended up being that State of Play happened, everyone talked about that, and Xbox just kind of got squished underneath. I think as the generations roll into a close, it's super easy to just be like, Xbox, what? We'll just wait till the next generation. It feels like the Xbox momentum is
sort of
died down.
They don't really have anything leading up to the end of the era, because obviously Halo Infinite is going to be next year.
Yeah, which is why something like Batman being at the, it's just called like X20 or whatever.
XO, I actually don't know.
But the thing is, like, the fact that we don't know the exact name of the yearly Xbox thing shows how little that thing's caught on compared to PlayStation Experience or Nintendo Direct or whatever.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll see more. Either way, it seems like we're getting a new Batman Arkham game. And the Court of Owls story sort of plays into like this whole Illuminati, big evil doers underneath Gotham and big boss battles and whatever else. So there's that. And we also talked about in the old video that me and you did that they might be basing the gameplay on the Shadow of Mordor type stuff.
Yes.
With different factions and going up against them.
Yeah, because we went in and I lost my mind looking into all the different symbols that were on display. It does kind of maybe lend itself to the idea that we'll see the League of Assassins as well, because the final symbol that appears in that cryptic tweet that Montreal sent out is the demon. Mm-hmm. And Ra's al Ghul is the head of the demon, which is, of course, you know, the leader of the League of Assassins. And Arkham Origins not only teased the Court of Owls, more certainly, I'd say, than the League of Assassins. There were a few statues on the Royal Hotel of the Court of Owls Talon figures, and you had the little nursery rhyme that the group has as well. But they actually telegraphed the League of Assassins being more heavily involved in the sequel more heavily. With Lady Shiva, if you talk to her, she kind of basically teases that, oh, Ra's al Ghul's coming and you're going to be...
In Origins.
So Lady Shiva is... It was, again, one of those weird side missions in that game which kind of looked like they had to cut it for time. But yeah, it looks as though maybe that'll be the faction war we're having. Maybe it's the League of Assassins coming into Gotham and the Court of Owls rising up, basically saying, hey, the Gotham's ours, you stay away, League of Assassins, and we'll have Batman caught in the middle.
My running theory is that, because they tweeted out capture the knight, as in, you know, capture a chess piece type thing. The general sort of like team, or the general sort of layout of the menus in Shadow of Mordor was looking down at almost a chessboard of players that you were moving in and out and whatever, sort of different power plays and everything. And Shadow of Mordor started out as a Batman game where you would have different factions going up against each other. So I'm hoping that eventually that's maybe what they're doing.
Let's just hope they don't monetize the hell out of it.
They almost definitely will, Rich. Yes. It's Warner Brothers.
I mean, maybe they've learned their lesson. Maybe they might go half in compared to Shadow of War. I don't know.
They could do with a win, considering that Warner Brothers haven't had the best last few years.
I mean, when was Arkham Knight? Was that 2015?
Origins is 2013, and you know, Montreal have been working on another game for 7 years now, and it seems, you know, judging from reports, it seems as though, you know, WB have basically been stifling them at every opportunity. Oh, we've got a Suicide Squad game. Oh, we don't want that. Oh, we've got a Damian Wayne Batman game. Oh, we don't want that either. And, you know, they've come back to this. So hopefully they've been able to retain, you know, this is still their vision and it hasn't been kind of trodden on by WB overall. Because, you know, there are some very talented people at that studio. You know, Patrick Redinger, who worked on the Splinter Cell Blacklist, he's heading up the creative direction there. So fingers crossed next week.
Modern Warfare got its, one of the newest story trailers that sort of shows more specific character beats and stuff like that. What did you guys think of that? Because there's two things to talk about with Modern Warfare. Let's start with the story trailer. We'll get onto the weird exclusivity controversy.
I am excited because I want a COD campaign.
It's been a long time coming.
I didn't realize how much I missed it when playing the bits of Black Ops 4 that aren't complete garbage.
Yes.
Like, I've been so tempted to go back and reinstall World War II and play that again. But I've actually started playing Modern Warfare 2 again, just playing through the campaign again, because it's like, I just want this very, it's a very popcorn sort of campaign.
It's Michael Bay.
I was just saying, it's like a Michael Bay movie.
It's stupid. And, you know, like I said, I had a great time with World War II. And I'm really, I mean, I played the beta of Modern Warfare and I absolutely bloody loved it. So I'm like, I just want the campaign. I need it now.
I will say, if you've been driving for Michael Bay themed action, this one definitely not in a bad way necessarily. It definitely feels more Catherine Bigelow in the way they're striving to depict, you know, leading into the idea of like the Hurt Locker in Zero Dark 30. And you know, this is definitely a more, I'm getting the impression this is more a mature Call of Duty, but at the same time, you know, I'm still apprehensive of whether Infinity Ward are going to be able to treat the subject matter with the degree of, you know, nuance that it kind of needs. And I'm excited by certain aspects, but I do again, I feel as though the campaign story trailer that I saw earlier in the week at State of Play is exemplifying my current anxieties over the game that's caught between two identities. It's like, you know, we want to do this more mature storyline, but we're also going to lean into the nostalgia of Captain Price being back and he's going to save the day. And it's
there
kind of like
that.
I like the idea of Price being a mascot for the series, because I think they should have done that ages ago, but at the same time I'm just kind of like, well, please just don't confuse the tone here. You're aiming to tell some very difficult themes, and you're looking at stuff like the legacy of, you know, I think what's meant to be a stand-in for the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, and how that's kind of, you know, spiraled out into further, you know, interventions in that region in the years since. And then you've got different things going on with domestic terrorism and, you know, terror attacks. And I'm just hoping that they treat it with a degree of not subtlety, but definitely care, because I don't want them to take a sledgehammer and do another airport massacre sequence.
It's a weird thing.
Lose
like,
their focus.
Yeah, because they've got like this sort of really like, you know, focused, well, assumedly focused vision for the story. And then they've said that the way that they sort of explain something like the multiplayer being so over the top with the white phosphorus stuff and whatever, is that they've sort of said that the multiplayer is its separate entity, which is like, I can go with that. That's kind of fine. I remember reading one of the hands-on reports from the earlier stuff at E3, though, that there's like a boss, well, they might have taken it out, but there was a boss battle in the story mode, and the first time that you play as the woman from Afghanistan, mm-hmm. when you're a child and you're trying to escape the room or whatever, and that you have to like stealth your way around this boss and find a knife and then stab him and then run away and find the knife and stab him again, and it's like the rule of three and whatever and stuff like that, where it was also those gamified elements kind of coming into what could be a more considered tonally thing. I thought that stuff was like that might be emblematic of that sort of weird jarring sensibility, but overall I'm psyched, and I kind of like the whole greatest hits approach that they're doing. It's like, here's everything that you remember and love about 2000's card coming back again.
I'm down for that as well. I do have faith in Infinity Ward after playing the beta and how well that played, how well it all felt, seeing the story trailers and stuff. I'm thinking that yes, they maybe could pull this off. We'll get the big silly stuff, but World War II had that as well. There was that really quite hard-hitting approach to the storyline of World War II with one of the members of your like sort of gang and how that all ended up at the end of the campaign. That was quite hard. And then I remember the fact that we crashed a train as well.
Yes.
Like, there are those juxtaposing things. And in that kind of situation, not that it was okay to have it like that, because obviously this was dealing with concentration camps and the treatment of Jews during the war. It still had both sides, but I still think it played them well. So, but I am quite looking forward to, as you say, like the idea that the multiplayer is separate. This is where all the big silly stuff happens. You can go blow stuff up here.
You get like a Tamagotchi or something in the multiplayer now. Like a little thing that lives on your wrist and...
It tells the time in real life. If you look at the watch, it's the real time.
There's like an animated thing and it shouts when you get kills.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can have balls to the wall stuff, leave it in the multiplayer, that's fine, because I had a great time with it. But yeah, I would like to see a really grounded campaign. I think that's why World War II has always stuck with me, because there were those moments that felt really like visceral almost, kind of like looking back at something like World at War, which you know, still had the silliness, but it still had that real... that real depth and grit to it. But yeah, on to probably
like,
more.
It makes me wonder, like, if you're, say you're, you know, you're the string pullers at the top of Call of Duty, and it's like, we're this massive, like, totemic, you know, first person shooter franchise, and everyone knows us, and everyone's gonna be looking at what we're doing. It's like, either you try and tick as many boxes as possible, you bring in the siege elements, and you bring in the Michael Bay stuff, and you try and do everything, or the complete other side of just how you view that is that it kind of feels aimless, and it feels like they don't really know what Call of Duty is.
I know you're very optimistic about the beta, but that's my impression I got from the beta. I felt as though it was just caught between two, you know, different identities, and I wonder if, you know, maybe the campaign will feed into that as well. I don't know. I was excited anticipating this release, but I feel as though it's trading too heavily in nostalgia at the same time, doesn't know where to make the real genuine innovation.
I think the part of the beta that made me think, okay, this is what it doesn't know what it's on about, is the ground war mode.
Yes,
because the whole format doesn't suit the Call of Duty player base and their approach to the game. It's like when you give a Call of Duty player say something like Siege, where you give them just any other first person shooter,
they're all joining my rank lobbies because they're all bad.
And they all assume that you can do this, that and the other. Like, there's a video, I've always tried to dig it out, there's a video of a COD player playing Team Fortress 2 for the first time, playing as a heavy, because it's all minigun, and they're stood at a window trying to like shoot through it, and it's like, dude, you can't even break the windows. And there's people trying to quickscope as the sniper. It's like, doesn't work like that.
It's like things like that, like you said, the ground war mode. It's like they're kind of, well, we can do a little bit of Battlefield, we can do a little bit of Siege, we can do a little bit of what Call of Duty used to be, and it's like, either that is ticking all the boxes because you can, because you're Call of Duty, or what are the signature Call of Duty elements and how sort of mixed are they when everything else is sort of clashing?
I think at the end of the day, I'm fascinated to see how this game gets received, because I can see it being very divisive. I can see it definitely playing to the crowd in some respects, and some people being very happy with what they've got, but at the same time, I do wonder if people are in for a nasty surprise in the sense they're coming back for traditional Call of Duty, but there is that different elements being pulled apart and you can't really see the one where the big focus is meant
to be. At the minute, I'm super positive on it, but I totally see the other side where it does kind of, it feels just as aimless as potentially confident if they think they can dip into as many pools as possible. It's a weird sort of state at the minute, but we'll find out more when it eventually comes out. Let's talk about state of play in general, because that was that happened at the start of the week. State of play is very much Sony just trying to literally do a Nintendo Direct. Like the aesthetic of it,
I actually saw
the animations.
Somebody put the state of play and the Direct side by side, and they are nigh on exactly
totally
the same.
Felt it when
even
I was watching
the animation, the sweet, literally transitionally using wipes and stuff to make it looks exactly the same. I mean, you know, again, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but it's like, this is kind of
but
shameless.
Also don't just copy, like, I mean Sony do that, like, it was like, oh, like, achievements are a thing, let's do trophies, like, oh, motion controls are a thing, let's do the PlayStation Move, and it's just like, you know, they always seem to get in there and do the thing that's working, which directors working extremely well. But what did you guys think of the state of play overall?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
As in the one we just had.
Yeah.
I was actually all right with it. Uh-huh. I think there was some stuff on there that I definitely found interesting. Obviously, The Last of Us 2 stuff was really, really hype. The story drive of Modern Warfare obviously got me in. The thing that got me right at the beginning, because I was streaming this at the time because I was on Twitch, and I was like, oh, it's the state of play. Let's switch over to that. And the first thing you saw was the Enhanced logo with a company that published Tetris Effect. And it made like a noise. And I literally went, and it was like humanity. It was lots of random people.
And you were like, oh, God.
Damn it. That was
that
me.
Game
that was
freaky,
thing.
Though.
It's
That's
very
piles of people.
Weird. It was a very weird thing to
I'm game
lead
for it,
with.
But it's weird.
Because it's Enhanced, I'm totally down. But yeah, I got that instance of, oh, my God, Tetris.
So they're the same devs as the Tetris Effect stuff.
They published it.
Right, cool.
They published Tetris.
Had a similar kind of when you think about it.
That's why when the noise came on and it said Enhanced on the black screen, I thought, oh, my God, it's Tetris. But overall, I was happy with it because I'd watched the first two and there was nothing in the first two state of plays that really interested me. So knowing there was going to be Last of Us at the end of this and also ended up there being Call of Duty, there was also Enhanced stuff. There was that weird game from the people who made Katamari Damacy.
Yes.
Where you can play as a toilet.
It's called Wabam.
Wabam.
Something like that.
It's anyway, like, I thought there was nothing really in that. Even Something A Simple Story. That really, like, it looks like sort of Human Fall Flat, wise. Like, the art style is not really physical.
My mind is entirely
anyway,
lost
like,
to
like, yeah, like, I think that state of play was the best one they've done so far, not just because of Last of Us Part 2.
I think it's in a weird state because, like you said, like, they're trying to ape Nintendo Direct, and Nintendo Direct is very much associated with, at the minute, much bigger stuff. Like, I didn't used to get that hype about a Nintendo Direct, but then they started, you know, debuting Breath of the Wild 2, and like, oh, here's, like, you know, this new Pokemon trailer and whatever. And so Nintendo very much treat their Directs as an E3. Like, here's this big thing we could have waited for. Yeah. Whereas Sony, I still don't think they know what it is.
It was watching it. It was very, very bizarre for me personally. I think if you're a first party publisher like Sony and you're coming towards you're demoing your own games, it was very weird. It was such a weird eclectic mix of offerings. I felt as though Call of Duty didn't belong there. It was very peculiar. It was like, okay, you could have released that anytime you wanted to. Why people aren't coming to PlayStation just to play Call of Duty?
Right, yeah.
I feel as though if you're going to use that platform, you should be, you know, demoing the exclusives that you have towards your own series.
Yeah, exactly.
And I felt kind of let down in that regard because I was just like, well, you could have shown half of these any other time. I was excited for the indie game where you have to out party Satan. That looked pretty
fun. that looked
really entertaining.
Some of the makers of Oxen.
And again, you know, Last of Us Part 2 kind of goes without saying how good that looks. But at the same time, I was just kind of like, I don't care about this. Like, if you're going to have your own event, you know, bring something more to the table, even if, you know, it's just an update on something. Like, oh, we couldn't show you Ghost of Tsushima today because we're hard at work making this, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, fine, show me that. I don't care about having another Call of Duty story trailer when the game's out next month anyway.
Or like a Death Stranding console, really. Like a special edition console.
Here's
or whatever.
A controller that looks like piss.
Got a baby in it.
I quite like the controller, I'm not going to lie.
I would like the controller if it had like a little mini fake baby in it.
But when you actually watch the trailer back, in the bottom, like, grip,
it started with.
like they have a baby there and it disappears.
Yep. Oh, I was like, come on.
Concern.
Baby in there.
But in terms of like the way the lead into that event, like, you know, it was very much off the back of Last of Us 2. It's like, you're getting new Last of Us 2. So if you're getting a release date, like, what's what we're going in to expect? And then when the show didn't open with The Last of Us 2, I was like, okay, we're going to end on it. And then it was like, well, that's kind of the thing. And then, like I said, I don't think they necessarily know what these showcases are for. Like, they don't have enough first party stuff to show. So they kind of default to just being, well, here's some indies, here's some stuff.
Scoop out it was hilarious. The rest of crap.
And they're worth seeing, but it's a weird
thing. It was so funny to me when they were debuting the PlayStation Plus games for October after having all the flack recently where, you know, they upped the subscription for PlayStation Plus to get better games, and we've been having crap for like the past few months. And then and then suddenly they bring, well, for a while, it was the, remember that, that month where it was literally what? It was like, it was PES and...
it was PES and something else, and then it got switched racing to Detroit.
Game. Yeah, they got switched to Detroit, and it was like, that's the backlash.
Oh, it was that, that Horizons game.
Yeah,
definitely not trying to get into Forza.
Yes, exactly. And then instead of, you know, The Last of Us Remastered is a great game to have as your free PlayStation Plus game on October. Yep. I've only played The Last of Us on a friend's PlayStation 3, so I don't actually own it, so I'm looking forward to getting that. But at the same time, it's like, why are you leading this with MLB show?
I was like, MLB was paid
like
for
the fact that PES got so much flack. Like, and they're going, PlayStation Plus, MLB. Great.
For it's a global audience as well. It's like such an esoteric pastime for the States specifically. I don't know if that's where most of your audience is, but at the same time, you have a global, this is a global platform that you have, and you're leading with that instead of The Last of Us Remastered after everyone's already in to see The Last of Us 2 again. It was very weird.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I think a lot of that stuff points to they don't necessarily know who's watching or like who to play for or how much to lean on the first party stuff. Like, Nintendo are known as a first party studio. Like, they have so many IPs associated with them. And certainly this generation have like brought more exclusives like to the fore. Like, they've been more in those conversations more this gen than ever before, especially compared to the PS3. But the actual rollout of stuff at the state of play was like watchable, but you weren't going away from it the same way we were from a Nintendo Direct, where it was like, oh man, I can't wait for the next one or whatever. And plus the placement of it, like, there was one back in like March or May, then we got another one like just the other day. Just weirdly sort of placed, especially when you potentially have
I guess as time goes on, more publishers and developers will be keen to actually use the state of play. Because I've seen, like, even when you go back to like the first Direct, which was like, it was a weird thing, the first Direct was like 2011.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's gained more and more traction over time when even like something like Dark Souls Remastered was announced on a Direct.
True. Yeah, yeah.
Which I found really baffling to think that it was announced there.
But those sort of moves, like, you know, established like, hey, look, this is,
this is something people watch.
Yeah, I mean, like a showcase level
the
thing.
The fact that even their like indie showcases can reveal things like Cuphead for the Switch, that's huge.
Yes.
Ori for the Switch, that's huge. That was on their like, it's in between Treehouse and Direct, like where the indie world sits. But like, I think as time goes on, the state of plays might get better.
I mean, they should. I mean, assumedly, they will do these sort of live shows. They have all the statistics after the fact. They have the engagement figures. They can then go to publishers and say, hey, look, you should do your new announcement with us and this thing and not Nintendo or whatever. And that makes sense going forward. But as they are at the minute, that thing just felt like it was a Last of Us. It could have just been a Last of Us 2 stream and whatever. Yeah. At least it gets us talking about things like humanity.
I mean,
or
directs,
whatever.
Do that. We have had directs specific for games. We have Pokemon Direct, we've had Smash Direct and Super Mario Maker Direct, all things.
So. I think Nintendo seems to know a little bit more about what they're doing at the minute anyway, but hopefully Sony will find a way to do it, because it would be fine, it'd be nice to have across the year various check-ins with Sony and to know what's coming with their sort of franchise.
It was just a double score of not having Ghost of Tsushima or Arkham. Well, I was like, for God's sake.
As soon as you finished, it was like, Ewan's going to be sad today.
If only. Let's talk about Medal of Honor, because it's finally returning on the Oculus VR. Now, I saw that Medal of Honor was returning as a VR game, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that the IP is coming back. Respawn are developing it. Which turns it around altogether, I mean, and I'm like, that's way better.
If that's how you get Medal of Honor back on everyone's minds, that's how you do it.
Give it to one of the best first-person developers this gen.
Yes.
Or like, you know, so far the last sort of 10 years or whatever. But yeah, Medal of Honor is returning to Oculus VR. It's called Medal of Honor Above and Beyond. Apparently they've done a whole bunch of interviews with World War II veterans, which, because it's in VR,
about to say, is it going to be World War II themed? It's not going to be, like, it's basically, it's ignoring the reboot. It's going straight from whatever the last Medal of Honor was.
Which is what a lot of people associate with Medal of Honor anyway. The thing that broke me in a lush way is that they've interviewed all these World War II veterans, but the way that it sounds is that you sit down with them in VR and they tell you about what they went through, and then you play that sequence, because obviously it would just transition into first person and you would just do the thing that they're telling you.
Fantastic.
Which, like, I'm all for companionship and taking care of old people anyway, so like the idea of just sitting down and sort of being hanging out with them and they go, and then I did this thing
and then I stabbed this crowd in the throat and the blood went into my face
and then I got a kill streak and I called in the nukes.
Like, wore onions on our belt.
It was the style at the time. I've ruined this wholesome segment now.
It was wholesome anyway.
The first
Yeah. Pong came to mind. Yeah.
To be fair though, I if you're gonna go, so you know, you're gonna call it Above and Beyond. You're gonna bring back this legendary IP, and like, you know, for Medal of Honor, I always remember that original one, in the original sort of cinematic in Frontline. Yes. The music that was in there, the making of thing, the choir, like it always, it kind of had an emotional stake. Like, yes. That they used to do back then.
Medal of Honor was one of the first shooter games that I played, and its reverence for the historic, for the history at the time, mm-hmm. was impeccable. You know, this was a game that really cherished the human cost of conflict. It never really, you know, it was never one to focus on big operatic set pieces. Mm. It was never like, here's the part where you get to be in a tank. It was always a case of, this is the mission that you're on, this is what actually happened. You know, you think of like the, is it Frontline, where it was like the D-Day landings, mm-hmm. where you saw that, and then you had stuff like Rising Sun, where they showcased, you know, the Japanese invasion of the Philippines, mm-hmm. firsthand, and then you know, MacArthur's island hopping campaign to get it back, all the way up to you working with the OSS and doing different stuff that way. Mm-hmm. And it was always a series that really prized the, you know, the human element of it all. Mm-hmm. And again, even though I'm a bit sick of US-centric, you know, depictions of World War II, at the same time, I'm definitely here for a game to look at the human element of that conflict, because it's something that people that tends to get lost in the bluster of video games, since we've not really had a World War II Medal of Honor since, was it Airborne?
I loved Airborne. Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing is, I like the whole, like you said, like bringing the human element into it. We've sort of seen bits of that, like with the vignette approach to Battlefield, like here's some individuals, this is a like something that happened over here whilst this thing was happening.
But then the execution
here
was always like, they had that opening vignette, and then afterwards the actual war stories themselves, especially in Battlefield 5, just fell flat.
Totally. I think that it's like, it's interesting, like this far along after so many of these games, it's like, well, what do you do to not just retread the same old ground, but you need to inject the humanity side of it, especially if we've had like all these big overblown blockbuster versions of these games. It's like, well, actually dial it all down and go, this individual did this.
Look at the biggest games that we've had this generation. They've always been so heavily story focused. You look at something like Horizon, Spider-Man, God of War, stuff like that. There's so much emotion and sort of raw humanity in that, that bringing that back makes the most sense. Mm-hmm. And interesting, they're going to do it for VR solely?
At the minute, it's only on Oculus Quest. It's on Oculus in general, but I guess it'll hopefully work on the Quest. But they're referring to it as a AAA game. It's been developed by Respawn. They've sort of put this different stuff out about, wanting to sort of connect with veterans and bring their stories in. So
completely lateral besides this. I hope this means that we're at least a year closer to getting a Brother in Arms revival, because
it's about time.
Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway is like my favorite World War II game ever. Mm-hmm. Like that combines, you know, the human cost of like a series like Band of Brothers, but then also, you know, having the actual realistic military gameplay that I thought really blended well together.
If we're recommending Band of Brothers, totally recommend if you want to just watch like a really good World War TV show. Also, Peter Jackson's They Will Not Be Forgotten is phenomenal. Remastered version World War I. That stuff's great. Completely switching gears, the Switch Lite has undersold.
That's what you did there. I did Switch.
I switched the gears. This is a Nintendo Switch that isn't a Switch, but the Switch Lite, apparently Nintendo were expecting to ship 300,000 units, and they have shipped 177,936, which I guess hints at the fact
that's
that
already a low estimate anyway, isn't it? 300,000.
Apparently it sold 13,000 in the UK, but the overall figures were still under from what they expected. But it doesn't surprise me that much, because I haven't seen any, I don't know anybody who's bought a Switch.
Well, it's like a Switch without the Switch. What's the point?
It's one of those things where I've been seeing it more and more, and it's like, it's so tempting. It's so tempting.
What makes you tempted? Because you have the Switch.
I don't know. It just looks really
cool.
It's
smaller.
You already have a Switch.
Yes. It does. That's just it. There is literally no reason to get a Lite if you've already got a Switch. And I think that's the reason why the sales are so low, because the Switch has exploded. Mm. Was it on like 32 million?
It overtook the Xbox.
Sold?
Yeah.
Something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So most people that want one have got one. Mm-hmm. I feel like it'll pick up towards Christmas with the release of Pokemon and stuff like that. So, I mean, as you said, that 300,000, is quite low. Mm-hmm. For that expectation, but again, maybe they are keeping it that low because they know it's going to pick up over time. Mm-hmm. Potentially,
it's weird because they discontinued, or they at least made a statement saying that they weren't making a focus on making more 3DSs and dedicated handhelds. And the Switch has been kind of encroaching on the Nintendo handheld market, obviously, since it came out. Yeah. So I think now, when they were like, "Oh, we're going to do the Switch Lite, and that's our actual new handheld," most people, they were already satiated by the handheld element by just taking the Switch on the go. I mean, I know I am, and so I'm not bothered about a Switch Lite. It's not offering me anything. If anything, it takes functions away. because you can't detach the Joy-Cons.
It's quite strange actually to think, because the 2DS for Nintendo, not so much the first one, the new one, was actually quite a big success. Like, I've been very tempted by a 2DS, even though there's literally no point in it. I kind of want one for like the one game I want to play on it.
It's weird with the Lite as well, in terms of the form factor, because like, it is nice and small. It kind of contends with the Vita. Like, I love my Vita, and it's like, you know, it's almost like a big bar of soap. Like, it's way more compact, and you can just slip it into a bag and whatever. But that would have made more sense in terms of, like, you know, if the Vita was trying to make a claim for this is the size that a handheld should be, and this is the sort of level of power that we expect or whatever. It's a weird release. Like you said, maybe Christmas will save it.
Maybe maybe it's come almost too late, because this is like just over 2 years into the Switch's lifespan. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's so used to this. If they released it alongside the Switch and said, here's the Switch.
Here's your options.
Normal, or what they could have called, like, the Switch Pro, the Switch Elite. Mm-hmm. Here's the Switch Lite. Here's both sides of the coin. You can pick from the get-go what you would like. I think then maybe you would have split it more down the middle rather than already, like, cement the idea that the Switch is this system that you can use anywhere. Mm-hmm. And as much as on paper, the Switch Lite was completely a great idea, and we were always talking about it beforehand, and it just made loads of sense. Mm-hmm. Now it's finally here. Everyone's kind of gone, oh, yeah. Actually, don't want
it's
it
like
now.
The price point's weird. It's like, you have the money to put down on a Switch, like, because you haven't got a Switch.
It's gonna be Goose Game that gets me on it, like, right. I think me and Zala talking about
would it be the
Lite
though, or the regular one?
Well, the thing is, probably the regular one, because you want to have the access to play on the TV,
like,
at the same
well,
time.
Right?
Yeah, you might as well. And the multiplayer as well. I think if the Lite, well, a nice thought, is probably being geared towards maybe, you know, families with kids that are quite young, and, you know, it's more robust. I think the more robust design maybe is should be marketed towards that area, especially with Pokemon coming out. Mm-hmm. But like, stuff that's like meant to be bigger, you know, I'd rather have it on the TV as well.
I'm not entirely surprised that it undersold. I think that it's interesting, like, in terms of like just what they think their two products are going forward, because they've always had a handheld, they've always had a main console, and now they've tried to tick both boxes with the same SKU, and it's just like, or the same sort of like a unit for the most part.
And for one of the units, the OG unit, it has worked. Again, like I said, on paper everything seems like the Lite was a good idea, but in practice, weirdly, it hasn't worked.
Yeah, it feels like...
I think we'll have to give it till Christmas. We'll give it a bit of time, because I think the Switch didn't explode on launch. It still took a bit of time to get it going, and then all of a sudden everyone realized, oh my god, this is great, and then it exploded again. So it might happen, but like I said, I think Christmas and Pokemon are going to be the ones to sell it, hence why there's already a Pokemon-themed Lite.
True, very, very true. And we can end on The Last of Us 2, which we've already done some stuff on the main channel on, but I kind of wanted to just do a PSA, because the general fallout from the new gameplay footage that came out as part of Thursday's embargo thing is, oh my god, it's the game where you kill the dogs. PSA, you don't need to kill the dogs. It's not a thing that needs to happen. Just don't kill them. It's fine.
I don't get this outrage at all. If you're in the I'm sorry. If old Yeller is going to come towards me and rip my throat out,
he's going for your face, mate.
He's going to get killed. Like, I don't understand why. It's a survival game at its core. I mean, you're complaining about killing dogs. It makes no sense to me. Like, it's just how it is.
My initial fallout as well was just like the tone that they've set up, the world that they've set up. It makes sense that you do whatever you need to do to survive. But I think that the way that it's kind of been twisted, and the focus that a lot of the write-ups have had on it, is like, oh my god, this is the game where you kill dogs. You have to kill dogs, etc., etc. And you don't. Neil Druckmann got out there on Twitter and like retweeted something from GameSpot, who one of their headlines was Last of Us 2 is going to have you killing a lot of dogs, and just put it out there and said, only if you want to. You don't need to.
This
is all.
This has all clearly been predicated around the whole meme doggo thing, and I'm just like, shut up, man.
people just love
watch
dogs.
Just reruns of Old Yeller on repeat, and then, you know, grow up and just kill them in the game. Like, it's not that difficult.
Or just kill them.
It's not a real dog.
Exactly.
Yeah, like,
it's
also
not
that.
a real dog.
I feel a pang of guilt whenever I kill like a cute animal in Red Dead Redemption 2, but also I need to make money, otherwise my guy's gonna starve. You know, it's a human kill dog world out there.
Contextual realism.
I think it's a controversy built out of the fact that people love dogs.
Yes, of course.
So let's get people talking about Last of Us, because you can kill dogs. It's like, I've been playing zombies for 10 years. I've been killing zombified dogs for 10
Can't
years.
Can't wait for the next headline. Last of Us 2 forces you to kill some heckin' woofers, and I'll just throw myself out the window right there. I'll do it.
Stuff about heckin' woofers, you.
It's true. But yeah, so I just wanted to include that as our sort of final note, because that thing was annoying me when I was coming in. But let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're following along on the video side, or come find us on social media if you're listening on the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Goodbye.
And Rich Hudson.
Thanks for listening. Don't kill the heckin' woofers.
Don't do it. And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.